Rat.
Rose.
No.
Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome back to Warp Trails, who you found, the RetroZap Podcast Network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me is my wife, co-host, and most favorite Star Trek fan, Beth.
Happy end of season two, everyone.
As Beth was just alluding to there, tonight we are concluding our coverage of Star Trek Lower Decks season two with a discussion of First Contact. And I probably don't need it this time around, but just in case, this is going to be a full spoiler discussion, and it will be rated potentially PG-13, really, probably just for one line in the entire thing, but better to be safe than sorry. So just as kind of a summary setup of this episode, the USS Cerritos is assigned to assist Captain Gomez and the USS Archimedes as it makes first contact with the Loparians. However, when they arrive at the system, a solar flare and an unstable planetoid destabilize the Archimedes and put it on a collision course with the planet. Captain Freeman is also up for promotion to a capital ship from the Cerritos, but she cannot take her crew with her. Initially, she doesn't tell them, but Mariner spreads the word after overhearing this while smuggling some contraband. Mariner then stops Freeman from departing in the captain's yacht to sacrifice herself and rescue the Archimedes, and Rutherford comes up with a plan to remove the Cerritos' hull to navigate through an asteroid field so they can safely tractor beam the Archimedes away from the planet and save the day. So that's kind of our setup, and we'll get to the conclusion during the course of our conversation. Beth, what did you think about the season finale?
I really enjoyed the season finale. I'm sure we will talk about it a lot, and a lot of more specific details. There were a lot of callbacks I liked, both to other Star Trek shows, especially the movies, but also to Lower Decks itself, which I really enjoyed. Yeah, there was a lot of it I really liked. I could have done with a little less, you know, Mariner and the captain rehashing the fights that they always insist on having. But you know what? Solid end to a solid season. How about you?
I agree with that. It's interesting. This season, I think, has seen a transformation of the show from really being heavy on the comedy and the callbacks to the and to the various tropes that Star Trek always employed in all its various series, and kind of lovingly mocking them, to the last couple episodes have been an homage to the series with a bit of comedy, but just not, it's not quite the same as it was at the beginning of season one, and even the beginning of this season here. I think the show has really evolved over the course of the season.
I was thinking about that when they pulled the outer hull off, that this was like what Star Trek might have done if Star Trek had an unlimited budget.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think that's a good observation. And this was I guess you could say that about Lower Decks in general. It's very, very, very Star Trek in that it really pays homage and calls back to everything Star Trek's done. But as kind of you were alluding to in your opening comments, I felt like this could have been blown out to a full course movie, especially something akin to what they did with First Contact and the likes on the big screen. And it worked, would have worked really, really well, but I really enjoyed this. But let's get into our discussion. So it starts at Starbase, which is pretty cool. I think we only got to see Starbase before in Lower Decks as part of the simulation when they were all being tested in the simulation pods.
I think that's right. Yeah.
But now they're there with Captain Gomez and the Archimedes. So Captain Gomez is another returning character from the Next Generation. And she appeared in season two and notoriously spilled hot cocoa on Captain Picard.
Yes. She was in engineering working for Geordi, and I like that. And that kind of goes to the, I think I've said it a couple of times, one of the things I really like about Lower Decks is if you get the joke, it's, or you get the reference, you get the Easter egg, it's more amusing. But at no moment did you have to remember who Sonia Gomez was in order to, you didn't miss anything. The show didn't, the show made complete sense if you didn't remember who Sonia Gomez was.
And to be frank, I didn't remember who she was. And it wasn't until afterwards that I looked it up, because we've had so many callbacks. There hasn't been like the accidental, we just came up with a captain's name. And so I figured that had to be somebody, and I looked it up, and it's like, oh, I remember her now. And it also helps that we just benched the Next Generation at the beginning of the pandemic. So,
right. Well, and I mean, Sonia Gomez is not, it's a cool name and I like the name and it's a good solid name, but it's not a name that's going to stick, I think, in terms of your memory of like, oh yeah, that was that character.
And I certainly liked her a lot better as captain here than I did as ensign in Next Generation.
Yes, she's overcome a lot of her awkwardness, which, you know, yeah, makes sense on the path from ensign to captain. One would hope that you would, and she did.
Certainly, certainly.
So really good captain.
So they're getting ready to celebrate Captain Freeman Day, which is one of those callbacks you were talking to Captain Picard Day, which was celebrated in The Next Generation. But why don't you fill people in a little bit on Captain Picard Day?
So I'm not going to get the Mariner quote right exactly, but that basically it was a fake holiday for children to a vanity holiday designed to trick kids into respecting authority. Thank you for putting that in our notes, because that was a wonderful line. So it was just a day where the children aboard the Enterprise celebrated Captain Picard by making crafts. And it is one of, I think, one of my more favorite openings, because, you know, Picard was notoriously uncomfortable around children, and Riker was having a very good time kind of
tormenting him with that.
Picard tormenting him with the crafts. And that makes sense. So yes, the banner from, it's weird because it's fun anyway, but Captain Picard Day has gotten some distance. The banner showed up in actually Picard. So
it did. Yeah, because it was in his little vault that he had, that he went to visit, to look at that painting back at the beginning of the first season of Picard. So I remember that too. I'm glad you brought that up. But Boimler is all on board Captain Freeman Day and is making the banner, despite the fact everyone else dismissing it like Mariner does. And then later, the Cetacean crew members that we have here, we'll get to them in a little bit. Captain Freeman, though, just happens to be up for this promotion. And it's her involvement in negotiating with the Pakleds that has led to this. But she hasn't told anyone in her crew about it yet. Mariner is smuggling what I can only guess is Romulan ale.
They're on Starfleet. I thought it was too. I mean, it's bottles of blue.
Yeah. But on Starbase, no less, like at Earth. I mean, not just like they picked it up somewhere randomly. She's there on Starbase with this stuff. And then she has her run-in with Jennifer, the Andorian.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, just as an aside, that was funny, but, you know, oh, you know, I'm that person you hate. I don't think about you at all, was Jennifer's response, which is like the best comeback for that.
It is the best comeback for that. I thought that was a really good exchange. And it kind of holds up, because if you think about it, like when Jennifer said that, I was like, this does seem to be a bit of a one-sided feud.
Yeah, indeed. But again, they're there on Starbase, and Mariner overhears this news about the promotion. And she's not happy about it. So she runs to the bar where Ransom, Shax, and Billups are drinking, and she just barges her way into their booth and spills the beans on this promotion. So as they're leaving Starbase, Ransom, Shax, and Billups go from passive-aggressive to just outright aggressive as they're going to warp. And, you know, thank you for giving us all this information. And so she calls them all into the ready room, and then Ransom gets the bad news that he's not going to be the next captain, that there'll be a new captain appointed, and they're all at loggerheads over this. So we get to this system. I'm just going to call it the Laperian system, because we know these people are the Laps. I have no idea exactly what all the descriptive terms are supposed to be for them. And this random unstable planetoid that they pointed out at the beginning of the episode, of course the solar flare blows it up.
Yes, creating Chekhov's planetoid.
Yeah, and creating this ionized asteroid field that disables the Archimedes and naturally sends it into a collision course with the planet that they're supposed to make first contact with. And then this is what gets us into our mission that everyone has to pull together, and the Cerritos has to figure out a way to navigate the asteroid field and keep the Archimedes from having this catastrophic impact with the planet. On top of that, Rutherford starts having these error messages pop up on his implant, which I got to say, that was a pretty good gag over the course of this episode.
Very good gag, yes.
Because he essentially lost the eyesight in his left eye because he had so many pop-up windows. Just error messages showing up all the time, and he didn't realize Tindy had left because she was standing to his left.
No, they used it quite well a couple of times and then kind of cleared it out before, pun intended, before the joke got old.
Right, and it was a growth moment for him in that he told Billups that he was saving all of his memories with Tindy and Triplicate, because at the end of the first season, when his original implant got damaged, he lost all of his memories of her. And so then it was this thing that was kind of holding him back. And so Billups points out, it's like, well, look, if you're too afraid to make new memories, because that, you know, he's used up all of his storage with these triplicate memories, then what's the point? And so in a climactic moment, he goes ahead and he deletes that. But that also gets us to what's going on with Tindy. She's got this, she's been summoned to the medical center to have this meeting with Dr. Tana. And when she gets there, she just happens to overhear that her file's being deleted and she's being removed. And she takes it to mean that she's being transferred off the Cerritos because Dr. Tana doesn't want her there. And that sends Rutherford and Tindy off on one last tour of the Cerritos because they're attached to the ship.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I also enjoyed that every time Tana was looking for her, she seemed to smell her, which seemed like a very cat-like thing to do, to, you know, use the enhanced senses that you have.
Mm-hmm, indeed. And so this puts Rutherford and Tindy in just the right place, because they're now in the system. All hell's broke loose. The Archimedes is going to crash into the Lap planet, and Freeman is about to leave in her yacht to try and navigate this asteroid field and do something to prevent this. And Mariner is caught up to her, and they're bickering this entire time, which you'd made mention of earlier, about being abandoned. And Mariner's going on about how she's some sort of Kirk-like character that's bold and independent. And Freeman says, you're not like Kirk at all. You're completely insecure, words to that effect. And so they're arguing. And Mariner knows that this is a stupid suicide mission that Freeman is running that's not going to work. And then Rutherford comes up with this bright idea that they could actually navigate through the asteroid field if they got rid of the outer hull, because then the ionized portions of the asteroid won't be attracted to it. And if they do impact the ship, it won't be automatically catastrophic to the ship. And
this this was an amazing, like, Star Trek as Star Trek moment, where there was a problem. And so before they're on the bridge and the bridge crew is like throwing out ideas, and it's very set up like, no, if a pomegranate size hit the ship, we'll all blow up and we'll be in the same situation. And they go through all this rigmarole. And then finally it's this like, you know, if we change the ship in this way, we can do it. And then everyone has to get together. I mean, it was such like, I was so nerding out, because I was like, this is, you know, they've got 20
it
hours to do
like
it.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
It was Star Trek for the senses. This moment here with what they had to do. Inartfully tried to say it earlier, but this whole episode was the most Star Trek this most Star Trek series has ever been. It was just so incredible the way they topped themselves with this. I'm not saying this is my favorite episode, but this was just so well done. And I really appreciated that they pulled out all the stops in this episode. And this was it. So we get this montage of them on the hull, like removing the plates.
The magnetic boots, and they're doing that pull and twist thing, and oh,
the Magna Lock, yeah, that we have to see in First Contact, that they released when they were releasing the deflector dish that the Borg were trying to convert into a way to communicate with another Borg. So we got one of those. And then of course there's one last panel that they cannot remove because something had scorched it and got
has
stuck
to
in
be
place.
Done manually. You always know there's one that has to be done manually.
Yeah, and so that leads them heading to Cetacean Ops.
Yes.
Okay, you're going to have to fill me in on this because I was looking into Cetacean Ops and I have heard that it had been brought up in Star Trek before, but we'd never actually seen it. And I
Yes.
couldn't remember where that reference came from.
Okay. It's actually from a book. So the Enterprise D has a Cetacean Ops section, but it was never seen in the show. But it was featured in the book, Star Trek: The Next Generation, in the Blueprints.
Okay.
So there's a few like little things going on here. There's the whole now Matt and the lieutenant are beluga whales, but in the voyage home, there's a discussion about how whales have a complex language that could be communicated through space. So you've got the idea that so they're kind of playing with the idea that eventually you could have whales or, whales and humans communicate. And that, the next generation kind of, like I said, gives you this hint of Cetacean Ops in the book.
Yeah, okay, because we
It's
never
a
saw it in a
deep cut.
show.
It's a deep, deep cut.
But so we got Matt and Komolu, which I thought was funny that we got such a
Yes.
basic name and then a complicated name like Komolu there. And they have like no real memory at all. They know who Rutherford is. They show up and hey, you look kind of sweaty. Jump in here and swim around with us. And then they make that same suggestion 2 minutes later. And then they had no idea that one of them had no idea that Mariner was Freeman's daughter. And you're like, keep up, Matt. And so,
Come on, man.
but then the whole point is that one of them has to get down, go all the way down to the bottom of this well, and then across another passage to get to the Magna Lock and pull it to release this one last panel.
Because of course they do.
Because that's, of course, how Star Trek, ships are designed. You put
Yeah.
your primary essential lock in the worst possible place. And Mariner's getting ready to do this, but Rutherford, Tendi, and Boimler are like, no, Boimler's got it. He can do this. You go make a good with your mom. And I love the way that Tendi just went off on Mariner because Mariner's going, oh, it's a family thing. And then Tendi like, we're your family. We support you. We got your back. We got this. Now go say you're sorry to your mom. I mean, just it was those occasional character breaking moments for Tendi. She's always this sweet, nice person. Then every once in a while, she just loses it. And this was just a classic, well-placed timing of that.
And she's completely accurate. Like, because, yeah, Mariner was not in a good headspace to, she's like, I'll do it and I'll save the day and then my mom will get all the credit. It was like, no, we can't with you right now. Go deal with your stuff.
And I really appreciate the fact that Boimler jumped in there into that water and he was swimming his way down. And so he's just trying to make small talk with Matt and Komolu. It's like, so either you guys doing anything for Captain Freeman Day? And one of them was like, no, not really. It's a celebration
For
for calves.
calves,
And so
which
even
is
they know.
good because I don't know that I would have been in the mood for them to hit on Boimler the whole way down the way they were hitting on Rutherford.
Yeah. Was it just me, or did Boimler do the whole Michael Phelps warming up thing when he was flapping his arms around before he jumped into the water? Was
He
that.
was. I mean, yes, that, yes.
I remember when Phelps became famous, how people were always noticing that little maneuver he would do where he'd fling his arms back and forth. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's what Boimler was doing. So he gets down there and he's trying to pull the lock. Of course, flippers can't do it, so they couldn't just send the dolphins to go do it.
No.
And meanwhile, they don't have any time to waste. So the Cerritos is underway. Ransom is having to pilot the ship manually,
Yes.
kind of like Riker
Riker
in,
did, yeah.
yeah, which movie? That was Insurrection, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie after First Contact.
The joystick.
Yeah, although Ransom's looked a lot better. It was much better
Yes.
placed as opposed to being on a pedestal in the middle of the bridge, like what Riker had. But they also had to get rid of the view screen because it was connected to the outer portion of the hull.
Right, it would be powered down, and so therefore he couldn't see anything, so they had to pop the again. Like, this was all so wonderfully Star Trek. Like, you've got Boimler has to pull it out, but no, they don't have time. So that last piece is gonna have to come out on the fly. And I was like, yeah, blow the view screen.
And so you got Jennifer and Mariner calling out potential impacts. And I thought it was fun. It's like, not a little bit to the right. It's like, you know, you got a contact at mark 326, you know, point whatever, like this, that, and the other. It's like, he knew how to correct for that. And I'm like, I just said a little to the right, a little more to the right, a little up, a little down.
More? No, my right.
But regardless, and it works. They get through there. Boimler gets the Magna Lock released just in time to release that last hull plate before they take a serious impact. They get to the astro field. The Archimedes is starting to enter the atmosphere. The Lapians, or Lapurians, whatever you want to call them, have no idea what's going on, but they're all pointing up in the sky, excited that they see something, picking their children up and putting them on their shoulders to look. And then the Cerritos engages the tractor beam just in time and saves everything. And then Freeman and the crew of the Cerritos get to make first contact. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. And of course, the head Lapurian is like, as Freeman is making her grand introduction, you know, I'm Captain Freeman of the USS Cerritos from the Federation. We'd like to extend our, he's like, hey, goes up and gives her a hug. Let's drink. So as far as first contact goes, they're pretty welcoming.
It was very welcoming. I also was wondering if maybe that was like the one guy who knew that ship was, that's kind of, if that ship collided, it was going to be really bad, in that like, we don't tell the civilians, but the government knew sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Could possibly be. So back on the Cerritos, they're hanging out at the bar. Freeman shows up. She's clearly drunk from celebrating with the Lapurians.
They're a welcoming people. Culture. A welcoming culture.
Indeed. And then Beckett and Jennifer make friends. And then Starfleet Command arrives. And so Freeman gives the order to have them welcomed aboard. And they go to the senior bridge crew meeting room. And Freeman is being very bold about how she's found an excellent crew. If she can't take it with her, then it's not worth going to another ship. And so she's turning down the promotion. And then she gets arrested for a terrorist attack on the Packlet homeworld, which they say destroyed the Packlet homeworld because of, she was alleged to have colluded with Klingon extremists and planting a Varumian bomb at the Packlet capital. And then the images they have are from when she was there negotiating a truce, when the one Packlet who was a spy got loose on the Cerritos. Mm-hmm. And then it is a cliffhanger. We get the classic Star Trek Blue to be continued that we got to see a couple times mid-season, but frequently at the end of seasons in The Next Generation.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm guessing season 3 starts off with the rest of the crew frantically trying to prove her innocence.
That would also be a very Star Trek thing.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to get a substitute captain in the meantime? And if so, who do you think is going to be? Anybody we know or somebody new, or what's going to happen?
I don't think they're going to do that, because I think what's going to happen is they're going to pick up immediately following, and it's much more going to be the Cerritos going rogue and proving the innocence of the captain without another. But you seem to think otherwise.
Well, the only the thing that sticks out to me is, what was the episode of The Next Generation where Picard, and I think it was Worf and Beverly Crusher, got assigned to infiltrate like a Romulan planet, and then they had a substitute captain on board that nobody got along with.
Yes.
Who made Deanna Troi wear a real uniform and just was...
introduced the extra rotation.
Yeah, and so could they not do some sort of homage to that episode with all of this?
Oh, they certainly could. They certainly absolutely could.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's a possibility. It would also be, you know, it could also be fun. That'd be another way to introduce another classic or guest Star Trek character from The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or something for a couple episodes as to serve as the acting captain. But I would, just given the tone of the show, I would expect it to be someone who is a bit more on the disagreeable side that they wouldn't get along with. So I'm not sure who that would be.
Yeah. I don't know. We will find out.
All right.
I'm not against that idea, but yeah, I think it's, I was getting more of a Search for Spock void or vibe where they're just, the ship goes rogue.
Well, it could be both. You could have the crew working at odds with their new captain. that to prove true. Freeman's innocence. I sincerely believe that the Cerritos, especially Boimler, Mariner, Rutherford, and Tendi, are going to be the ones working the hardest to prove that Freeman was not actually involved with colluding with renegade Klingons to bomb the Plaquilid homeworld. Who do you think did bomb the Klingon or the Plaquilid homeworld?
Oh, I think the Klingons bombed the Plaquilid homeworld.
Was it just the same group that one captain belonged to, or just an overall Klingon plot?
I think that in the last episode with the three ships and the new captain goes back to the Empire to explain what's going on, I think the Klingons decided to blow up the Plaquilid homeworld rather than just sort of, that was their, like, we're going to erase this.
Oh, okay. Interesting. All right.
What do you think? Who do you think did it?
I'm not sure. I was assuming that there was somebody behind that Klingon, that rogue Klingon captain that we got to meet in the Lower Decks episode. And when he failed, whoever it was took matters into their own hand to introduce this instability between the Federation and the Klingons. But,
well, speaking of conspiracies, what do you think Rutherford's forgotten memory is all about?
I don't know. I guess we forgot to mention that. So yeah, when he jettisons his redundant memory files, he even says to Tendi, I think I accidentally remembered something I wasn't supposed to know. And it was these shadowy figures, one of which says, what happens if someone asks him why he got the implant? And the other one says something to the effect of, don't worry about that. He's going to believe it was voluntary that he did this. So apparently he didn't get the implant voluntary and somebody was behind it. Is it Section 31 or someone like the Tal Shiar, or I'm assuming it's an organization like that.
I am too.
I don't have a lead candidate for that.
No, I don't either. But I was just sort of curious about that one.
Okay. Well, what did you think about season two overall, especially compared to season one?
I think it was stronger. I mean, so they mentioned, I don't think we mentioned this either when we were talking about it. And I think this episode highlights a lot of what I really liked about season two, slightly more than season one. You know, they do the callback to the Koala episode, which was just a wonderful gag from season one, where Boimler basically almost dies and gets saved by the whales. And he's like, I saw a koala. It's just a wonderful callback to that episode, which I thought was great. So there's that aspect of it where there's, you know, sort of, and there was, you know, the who is Jadzia Dax?
Oh, that was a great line. Or
that reference.
So we didn't actually wrap up that line. So Dr. Tana catches up with Tendi, brings her into her office, and says that you master everything that you set your mind to. It's strangely disturbing. And so you're not really suited for medical, and she's promoting her to the bridge officer training track. And Tendi says, oh, like Jadzia Dax. And Dr. Tana's response is like, what, who? I don't know who the F that is. No, like Spock.
Spock. Which is, of course, they both were exactly the same. You know, the bridge science officer.
Right.
But yes. Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, you know, I like that they do those callbacks to the universe of Star Trek. And, you know, they're super subtle ones. And then they're super unsubtle ones. You know, the Jadzia Dax callback being the unsubtle, the captain's yacht being a little more subtle, the Sonia Gomez really subtle. Mm-hmm. But then they also do these season two especially, I think, did a lot of Star Trek being Star Trek episodes, which I really enjoyed. One of the things I liked about season one, which also was consistent in season two, is the things that in Star Trek would have gotten drawn out for an entire episode get dealt with in like 15 minutes, half an episode maybe, or just get blown over as being, you know, not a thing.
Because these episodes are 24 minutes long as opposed to 45, so they dispose of a lot of the idleness of a Next Generation or a Deep Space Nine episode and get to the point a whole lot faster.
And I think I've said this a couple of times, you know, because we have been watching Deep Space Nine as we've been watching Lower Decks. And sometimes I'm like, wow, Lower Decks is too fast. And then sometimes I'm like, wow, Deep Space Nine is too slow.
Yeah.
Because of the differences in the pacing. But I really, and I don't know, maybe part of this is just the last few episodes of season two were so strong and I enjoyed them so much. And I'm very excited about this to be continued. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the show. I really enjoyed season two and I really like the vibe that it has at the moment and how it's setting up season three. What about you?
I really like it. I mean, I was a fan of season one and I was a fan of the beginning of season two, but I really liked the way the show evolved over the course of season two, where it was so less reliant on the gags and the sight humor and the Easter eggs. And it was still plenty of comedy on an episode by episode basis. Don't get me wrong, but we spent so much time on the first several episodes of this second season, just like listing off the Easter eggs at the end of the episode that we encountered here. And while there still was these homages, it was less, oh, did you notice that thing in the back corner of the captain's office? And that was clearly a model of whatever Starstruck from this one episode and that type of a thing. Mm-hmm. And the stories were worthy in and of themselves. They would have some funny moments. And I mean, the whole thing was hilarious, but you could strip out the comedy and still make a really great episode of Star Trek. So I really appreciated that about this later half of the season. So I'm with you. The first episode season wasn't bad, but the second season took everything that was great about season one and improved upon it. So kudos to them. I'm excited to see what they do with season three. And yeah, keep going. Give us much, much more of this. It's too bad there's only 10 episodes a season because they definitely leave you wanting more.
Yeah. Speaking of call outs, during the captain's speech that they're going to, you know, Cerritos strong, did you see the crew member in Lower Decks wearing the Geordi visor?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of I was like, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, you got any other final thoughts on this one?
No, but this was a really, I don't remember all of the cliffhangers, but this is one of the stronger cliffhangers. The captain gets arrested for blowing up a planet. That's, I don't know that that's up there with Mr. Warfire, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, the Paclids can go commiserate with the Romulans about losing a planet. So, yeah, oof.
And the Klingons, depending on your timeline, and Vulcan, depending on your timeline.
Exactly. All right, then. Well, this has been fun. And that will conclude our discussion of the season finale of season two of Lower Decks, First Contact. We'll be back sometime in the near future, most likely with our discussion of season four of Discovery.
That's what, November? End of November?
Yep. And we're a little bit late on that because we got the holidays coming up. So we will get to it, but it may not be in lockstep with each one of those episodes that are coming out, but we'll be there. But again, thanks everyone for listening. Before we go, Beth, can you remind everybody where they can find us online?
Sure. We can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Warp Trails Pod. And then we're on the RetroZap Discord server. Find the Warp Trails room and discuss Star Trek with us.
Indeed.
What else is in that RetroZap universe of ours?
So, of course, we are part of the RetroZap podcast network, and you can head over to RetroZap.com and find all the other great podcasts that cover everything from collecting, MCU, DC, Doom, Star Wars, and a whole lot more. That includes my Star Wars podcast with Jay Krebs, which is Podcast Stardust. And with that, so just once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Live long and prosper, and we'll talk to you next time.
Take care, everybody.